Travis Scott is more than a rapper. He's a cultural disruptor. Known for his brutal live shows and genre-bending sound, his meteoric rise hit a devastating pause in 2021 with the Astroworld Festival horrific tragedy.
I just want to send out prayers to the ones that was lost last night.
She can't breathe! She can't breathe!
But Scott thrives on chaos, using it as fuel to push the boundaries of music and culture. This is the story of Travis Scott. Jacques Berman Webster II, better known as Travis Scott, was born on April 30th, 1991, in Houston, Texas. His mom had a good job at Apple, and his dad ran a successful business. But guess what? They were so caught up in their own grind that they didn't have much time for him, so Travis was sent off to live with his grandmother until he was six. In a 2012 interview with Complex, he said, "My grandmother stayed in the hood, so I seen random, crazy shit. I saw people looking weird, hungry, and grimy. I was always like, I gotta get the fuck out of this shit. It made me who I am right now."
Man, I had this like love-hate relationship with this place, though.
When Travis turned six, he moved back with his parents and began living a more comfortable, middle-class life. This is when music really started to take hold of him. His dad wasn't just a businessman, he was also a soul musician, and his grandpa was a jazz composer. But Travis had a different beat in his heart. He was all about rap.
First time buying a CD was DMX CD.
So, it's no surprise that while attending Elkins High School, Travis got involved in musical theater and then started making his own music.
You know, just been doing music for like, since I was like 17, making beats around that time too. Started making beats. I had my room, I turned my bedroom into a full-blown studio, like fuck the bed, fuck everything, man. Like I slept in a chair, you know, shit was just like real. You know, and like, man, I was on a PC, broke down ass PC, man, you know what I'm saying? Mom got me a Mac, and I just like had to do it, man. Like all my friends, Ashton, all my homies just came through and just like recorded and shit. And so I was like an engineer, and man, I was like, man, I used to call that shit producing, man.
It is my first keyboard I made beats on.
After high school, he went to the University of Texas at San Antonio.
I went to be a nephrologist when I grew up, a kidney doctor, yeah.
However, during his second year, he decided to drop out to focus entirely on his music career.
I mean, I left college, like my sophomore or junior year college. So when I went to New York, I stayed with my homie Ashton in New York. So it was probably about like 2 years, maybe like 2.5 years. Once I left college, like on a journey from like school to like trying to put out a rap album, you know?
At this point, he was still going by his real name, but he realized he needed a stage name to represent his new identity. He chose Travis Scott. Travis was in honor of his favorite uncle, and Scott came from his biggest musical influence, Scott Mess Cuddy, better known as Kid Cuddy.
Yeah, my mom would send me like some money every like 2 weeks for books and like food and my rent. So I use that on like straight gas and taxis or like plane tickets or whatever. I was spending the money on like clothes, whatever. Then I got caught and then she just like cut me off. I knew what I was doing with the money. It wasn't like I was going out buying drugs. I was going out like, you know, harming myself and going out spending it on like stupid stuff. I was spending it on like things that was gonna get me to like the level of just where I'm at now.
When the money ran out, Travis was forced to swallow his pride and return home. Around this time, he found the email address of Kanye's sound engineer and producer and began sending him his tracks. This producer immediately recognized Travis's potential and arranged a meeting with him.
He was like, yo, can you come meet me in L.A.? And I lived in Houston. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah. And like, he thought I lived in L.A., so I bought this ticket. I met him like right across the street from Ambita Music, that record shop.
Yeah.
It was like a 15-minute meeting. And I was like, I brought my laptop, had all this shit. I came straight from the airport to the meeting because the meeting was at like 10:30. And like, I was like, we about to go to the studio? He was like, no, I got to go on the Watch the Throne tour. I was like, what the fuck?
When that meeting led to nothing, Travis returned home only to find his parents had had enough. They cut him off financially and told him to never come back. But Travis didn't flinch. His vision was crystal clear. He was going to be a rapper, whether they got it or not. No one was going to derail his journey. So he booked a flight back to LA, counting on a friend who promised him a place to crash. But when he landed, that friend ditched him, leaving Travis broke and stranded. Standing in a hotel lobby, not sure what to do next, Travis's phone suddenly rang. It was Kanye's engineer, letting him know that Kanye had finally listened to one of his demos and wanted to meet him in New York.
Carmen was like, yo, man, Kanye fucks with that beat. It was like crazy. Flew out to New York that same day. And like, we kicked it.
I made it to New York. I played Ye my music. He fucked with this shit so hard, man. It's like, man, you gonna be the future, man.
This was the moment Travis had been waiting for. Things were finally starting to get real.
So then you get out here and you go see Kanye.
And then I met him. I finally met him. Then I played him my album. He was like, damn, bro. Like, he's like, you're like super like ill. He's like, damn. Like, he was just like talking to me for like 2 hours, showing me like all these ideas.
But, you know, he's like, you know, since day one, man, since we met, you know, he's like been fucking me for a while. He's fucking with me for a while, you know. That relationship between me and him, like as a mentor and a motherfucker, just be like really like holding it down and like help me with the music and like, you know, help me figure out, you know, it's just like awesome, you know. And we just like, you know, come together and like make tunes, you know, for his album, my shit.
After teaming up with Kanye, Travis dove into creating his debut mixtape, Owl Pharaoh, which finally dropped in May 2013. The project was shaped by the guidance of Kanye, who had taken Travis under his wing as his protege, and the legendary Mike Dean, making it a powerful introduction to the world.
Well, that's where my kind of career kind of started, right there.
However, Owl Pharaoh received mixed reviews. Many critics felt that the mixtape seemed unfinished and that Travis's rapping wasn't as strong as his production skills.
On these tracks, Travis bites numerous MCs across these songs so hard that by the end of the final track on this thing, his teeth must be dull. The beats on this thing range from banging to recycling bin, and the lyrics, flow, lyrical content as well is pretty average for, you know, an up-and-coming internet rapper. Track after track, Owl Pharaoh basically has the makings of a Dat Piff rap demo that has a few hundred downloads on it.
Still, Owl Pharaoh shows an artist on the verge of discovery, revealing early talent and hinting at the great potential Travis Scott would later realize. It highlighted his musical strengths, fearless experimentation, and his desire to push the boundaries of rap. Although the world didn't fully recognize his potential back in 2013, Owl Pharaoh has since earned its place as a key piece in his journey. Let's not forget that in 2013, XXL took notice of what Travis Scott was bringing to the table. They highlighted his potential by making him a member of their freshman class of 2013, marking him as one of the year's most promising new artists. By the time Owl Pharaoh was released, Travis already had the concept and title for his debut album, Rodeo. To build anticipation, he dropped another mixtape titled Days Before Rodeo, intended as an appetizer to the album.
You know, I just dropped this free album.
Now, what's with this free album, man? You just want to give away free music?
I mean, I just thought like it was like at a point where I'm about to drop my album called Rodeo. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to like instill like, you know, the sound of like, you know, kind of like tell people like what is my album's going to feel like and like the story, the pre-story mm-hmm. to it, you know.
Your style is not like anything I've ever heard from in Houston.
Yeah, and that's the whole point, man. Like, you know, I'm trying to like, you know, revamp the culture, like give it a new sound, man.
Featuring artists like Big Sean and Matty Healy, the mixtape was released in August 2014 and found more success than his previous project.
A lot of people seem to remember me condemning his last mixtape and were really sort of curious as to whether or not I think there's been any significant improvement from one project to another. And Days Before Rodeo is definitely, unquestionably, a better project.
I was so impressed by this. Yeah. I really, like you said, I did not think that it was going to be this developed at this point.
Doesn't matter what it is, they love you.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, it's cool because it's like, it still hit hard as fuck. You know, Houston known for like that hard ass music, but it's just like a new vibe, man. I'm just trying to like revamp it because I feel like, you know, the music that Houston was brought up on is kind of like, I wouldn't say dated now, but it's just like, you know,
right.
It's not like up to this relevancy. It's like, man, kids like me, we on like a new wave.
Right.
And it's mad kids like me. Mm-hmm. You know, we looking for a wave, you know, but they like listening to niggas that's not even from the city no more, man.
Right.
So it's like, I'm just trying to bring that, you know, we got the biggest city in the, like all one of the biggest cities, you know, in mm-hmm. the country.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so like, you know, that culture's there. It's just like no one to like run with it. You don't have like nobody to root for it, really.
This success led Scott to headline his first tour with Young Thug and Metro Boomin as his openers. The tour was a massive success, with so many shows selling out so quickly that Travis Scott had to add extra dates in Los Angeles and New York. And to make things even more exciting, big names like Kanye West, Chris Brown, Whale, and Birdman made surprise guest appearances in certain cities, taking the energy to another level.
I'm working on my album. It's yep. called Rodeo. I dropped like a free album before that, you know, and then I did a tour. Did y'all come to the tour?
What? The tour was crazy. Who wasn't?
Rodeo dropped in September 2015, marking a huge milestone in Travis Scott's career.
I mean, how good does it feel to finally be getting an official album out, man?
Man, it feels good, man. It actually feels good that, you know, I got fans that are there to like, you know, want to hear what I have.
Yeah.
It's kind of like surprising, man. I still underestimate myself thinking of like how people think of me. I feel like I still need to grow as an artist, but I feel like it's just like a big weight off my shoulder knowing that the two projects I did put out, you know, has built me up to be able to put out an album. So it's a blessing, you know.
Rodeo was the ultimate result of all the connections Travis had built over the years. The album's credits read like a who's who of the biggest names in rap and beyond. With narration by T.I., it weaves a story that's both mysterious and captivating, detailing Scott's rapid rise to fame and the dangers that come with it. The album was packed with star power, featuring guest appearances from Quavo, Kanye West, The Weeknd, Chief Keef, Justin Bieber, and Young Thug, among others. On the production side, it boasted heavy hitters like Mike Dean, Kanye West, Metro Boomin, Pharrell Williams, and even Travis himself.
Definitely, I've worked with like some of my favorite artists I've always been wanting to work with on this album.
The album includes the track Antidote, which became Travis's highest charting single at the time, peaking at number 16 on the Billboard Hot 100. After its release, mosh pits and festivals were forever changed. Antidote didn't just energize the crowd, it became the centerpiece of Travis Scott's adrenaline-fueled performances, laying the groundwork for the larger-than-life entertainer we see today. As a whole, Rodeo received positive reviews and debuted strongly, reaching number 3 on the U.S. Billboard 200 and claiming the number 1 spot on the Billboard Rap Albums chart. It also secured a place on Complex's list of the best albums of 2015. I mean, Even Fantano was positively impressed this time.
I didn't really like his past two projects at all. And I feel like the difference between what he's done over the past few years and what he did here is like night and day. And some of the changes that he's made to his style and his sound have been very minuscule on some of these songs, but they've made all the difference. I'm feeling a 8 on this thing, Tran.
And yet this is nothing compared to what would happen later.
Hey yo, listen son, this is not no motherfucking ballet, this ain't no runway, this ain't no motherfucking dance show. You either get on this stage or rage, or take your motherfucking ass home, you understand?
After releasing Rodeo, Travis Scott immediately started working on his second album, titled Birds in the Trap, Sing McKnight, which was released in September 2016, almost an exact year after his debut album.
My album's called Birds in the Trap, Sing McKnight, and I'm gonna keep it short for this explanation, but it's anybody, a creative that's kind of like been, you know, stuck and like had a problem with just getting the idea out. It took me 8 months just to get the 90210 video out with Hype Williams. It took me 6 months just to get the action figure out. It shouldn't take no one, no artist that long just to, you know, like get some idea out that is something like, especially something that's gonna like, you know, culturally shift the, you know, the world musically. Man, I feel like, you know, now the music's coming more towards the independent artists. I feel like in a couple of years, we all gonna be able to like fly around and just do what we want.
But why Sings McKnight?
Because I wanted it to be more like a play. I wanted, at first, my original album, like the plan was for it to be a play. I wanted like Andre 3000 to narrate the whole album. I had this like play idea, act one, act two, act three. And then, you know, later on, I kind of was just like, with the visuals, I can kind of like make it more of a play, but there's no way I can make an album like a play. I'm too like, you know, I'm too much of a rager for this shit to be like, I mean, sorry.
Stuff.
To
be, there you go.
for stuff to be that, you know, I didn't want people to overthink it. I didn't want it to look too much. So I felt like the only thing that needed to be like very complicated was my title. If people didn't understand it, and the music just has to be like straightforward.
Birds was a massive commercial success, marking Scott's first time topping the Billboard 200 charts. But creatively, this one feels like it's made up of leftovers from other projects. The production doesn't switch up that much from track to track, and after a while, the recurring themes of drugs, guns, and money start to blur together.
I would rather call this record Birds in the Bed, Sleep Good Night, because this thing is sonic ambient.
But the album also checked off a personal dream for Travis, collaborating with his idol, Kid Cudi.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, man.
What's up, baby?
What'd it do, man?
Ain't shit.
On the fourth track, Through the Late Night, Cudi not only sings the hook, but also delivers an unforgettable verse, making it a standout moment in the project.
Kid Cudi, man. Kid Cudi's like really like one of the main dudes I kind of like looked at and listened to all the time. He saved my life. He saved me from doing like random bad things to myself, kept me like focused. Like,
just through his music or personal relationship?
Well, not just through his music, because I didn't know him until like the first time I ever met Kanye. That was the first time I ever met him. But I didn't really know Cudi until like earlier, like late last year when he came by the studio one time just to like talk to me.
What was it about Cudi's music that spoke to you so much?
I felt like he really dialed in on like the youth and really dialed in on like inspiration, like how to inspire you. Like his words was like very selected on like what to do. I feel like he always made the soundtrack to like my life or anybody's life who was like going through the same thing. If you're a big Cudi fan, like you know exactly what I'm saying. Like he says the exact same things like you growing up with. It makes it sound way cooler. He's like, yo, I went through this, I went through that. You know, my mom didn't have this. You know, we had to go through Christmas to do this. But it sound, the beats and everything just sounded like, you know, the Nutcracker.
Man, I love you, man.
I love you, nigga.
I can't wait till this motherfucking song come out tonight, man. What the fuck, man?
What we doing? What we? How we celebrating?
Man, I'm getting wasted.
All right,
we already started.
Let's get lit.
You know, I'm sipping.
I'm sipping on some whiskey right now.
Oh my God, I'm on this tequila.
But Travis was working towards something greater than rodeo or birds. Astroworld was the project he had envisioned since his childhood in Houston, where he made beats in his bedroom. The album was Scott's way of incorporating everything that made him who he is.
Astroworld's been set in stone since rodeo. So my whole idea was like, if you locked in the rodeo, then definitely locked in the Astroworld. It's like, I'm just finishing the saga I started on my first album. You know what I mean? This was supposed to be my second album. I had to go quick because I had these ideas. I just had to get off real quick. But now I'm finally back home with Astroworld, you know?
The album takes its name from a since-shuttered amusement park in Travis's hometown of Houston. Astroworld refers to more than just a theme park. It symbolizes happiness and joy and excitement and thrills.
What's kind of the difference between Astroworld and rodeo?
That's a hard question. I think it's just... You know, it's just a different story. I've been through so much different shit, you know, in my time. You know, I've seen so much different stuff now. You know, it's just a different story I have to tell. It's kind of like a more personal album. I just want people to kind of, like, get to know me, you know, and, like, really get to know the rage inside, really what's going on in my mental, like, what I be thinking, how my mindset, how I really feel about all types of shit.
During the making of Astroworld, Scott's life changed drastically. He began dating Kylie Jenner, and the couple had a daughter, Stormy.
So congratulations on your album. Astroworld is like the biggest album of the year.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You have the biggest album of the year, and you have a brand new little baby girl.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
What a year for you.
I know, right?
Yeah. She is... Look at that face. Yeah, that's just got to be hard to be away from her.
Yeah, I just had to leave her to come up here, and it's just so hard. She's so...
Astroworld dropped in August 2018, debuting at number one on the Billboard 200. Critics praised it, cementing Travis Scott's status as one of the biggest forces in music.
In terms of this making him like that top five, and again, we're talking about top five and more than just lyrical, really just this top five hip-hop musicians,
yeah.
He's absolutely in it. This was what cemented the fact that he's in that group.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's well-deserved. It's like the coming-of-age album, like, for example, Culture 2 Famigos. We knew they were affecting culture so long. Once that album dropped, they got everything around it, that big hit. Grammy nominations, all that. That was it.
Yeah.
This is it for Travis Scott, and I'm very proud of him for it.
I do think this record is far superior to that of Birds, and it does seem like Travis is putting in the effort once again to not only make great tracks, bring great content forward, but also push the trap sound into the future, and continuing to keep open this throughway between hip-hop and psychedelic music in the mainstream.
Astroworld brings together a superstar roster from pop royalty like Drake, The Weeknd, and Frank Ocean, to indie geniuses like Tame Impala's Kevin Parker and James Blake, and the newest wave of rap's finest like Gunna, Sheck Wes, and Juice WRLD. The production, easily the most powerful of Travis Scott's career. It was obvious he had taken his time with this project. Each track feels deeply connected, even if there's no specific story being told. He managed to capture a sense of wonder and excitement, almost like a kid looking up in awe as they entered a theme park for the first time. The tracks are layered with Travis's signature auto-tune, blending the sounds of Birds and rodeo to create a playlist full of trap bangers that hit hard from start to finish. Every inch of the album is filled with sonic details, like the Uncle Luke sample on Sicko Mode and lush synths that create an atmosphere so rich, you've got to step back and let the layers unfold. It's an album where the deeper you dive, the more you discover. Speaking of Sicko Mode, it's impossible not to mention how it instantly became a hit. The track's infectious hook, paired with an unforgettable verse, from Drake and Travis Scott's standout vocals made it one of the biggest tracks of the year. At this point, Travis Scott was untouchable. He was in love with a powerhouse woman, they had a beautiful, healthy daughter, and he had just unleashed one of the most game-changing albums of 2018. Travis was on top, and the world was watching. There's no denying that Astroworld changed everything for Travis. It solidified his place as the face of Houston's comeback, and his Grammy nominations for the album were just the icing on the cake. Nominated for Best Rap Album and Best Rap Song, Scott's influence was too big to ignore. And even though he didn't take home a trophy, let's be real, just being nominated proved that Scott wasn't just part of the rap scene, he was changing it. In November 2018, Travis kicked off the Astroworld Festival and also found time to appear on five tracks from Metro Boomin's album, Not All Heroes Wear Capes. By December, it was announced that Maroon 5 would headline the Super Bowl halftime show, with Travis Scott joining them as a special guest. Booking big stars for the Super Bowl halftime show is usually a breeze, with legends like Bruce Springsteen, Prince, and Beyoncé gracing the stage in the past. But that time, things took a different turn. Why? It had been 2.5 years since Colin Kaepernick, the former San Francisco 49ers quarterback, started kneeling during the national anthem to protest police brutality against African Americans, and other players followed his lead. Many people, including celebrities and activists, were upset with the NFL for how they handled Kaepernick's protests and subsequent unemployment. As a result, big names like Jay-Z, Rihanna, and Cardi B all turned down offers to perform at the Super Bowl in solidarity with Kaepernick. When Travis Scott accepted the invitation to perform, he made it clear that the NFL had to donate $500,000 to the social justice organization Dream Corps as part of the deal.
What do you think of Travis Scott performing at the Super Bowl?
I think that's, you know,
it's major.
I think that's his business. You know, I don't really, it's too political for me. It's just like one of them things where people mad at him for performing, but it's just like, you still gonna watch the Super Bowl regardless. Mm-hmm. You know what
right,
I'm saying?
So right,
it's like,
right, right. And
be mad at yourself.
Yeah, like, are you mad at yourself? If you're mad at Travis Scott, then are you mad at Cardi B for doing a Pepsi commercial? Then are you mad at the players for playing at the Super Bowl? There's a lot of red tape, man.
It's very political, man. You know what I'm saying?
As expected, not everyone was thrilled with his Super Bowl performance. While his energy was off the charts, some fans felt he was out of breath at times and even forgot some of the lyrics. Plus, he performed without auto-tune, which didn't go unnoticed. Travis didn't let that Super Bowl backlash get to him. Just a year later, he stepped things up by performing 5 virtual shows in Fortnite, pulling in over 27 million viewers. But this wasn't just a big moment for Travis, it was a game changer for music and entertainment. His virtual concert was unlike anything seen before, blending music, gaming, and interactive experiences in a way that had never been done. And to top it off, he premiered The Scots with Kid Cudi, which shot straight to number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100. Travis wasn't just performing anymore, he was rewriting the future of entertainment. While dominating the charts, he also landed a song on the soundtrack for Christopher Nolan's Tenet. And then he dropped Franchise with Young Thug and MIA, which shot straight to number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100. With that, Scott became the first artist in Billboard history to debut 3 songs at number 1 in less than a year, an unprecedented achievement. Though he had to cancel the 3rd Astroworld Festival due to COVID-19, Scott wasn't backing down and simply postponed it to November 2021. The night of the event, the hype was real as 50,000 fans gathered at NRG Park in Houston. But what started as a celebration turned into a devastating tragedy.
Extra value meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
When Travis Scott took the stage, the crowd went crazy. Literally. Thousands of fans surged forward, all packed shoulder to shoulder. It was a sea of bodies moving in unison, and things got out of control fast. People at the front were being crushed, and those in the middle were fighting just to stay standing. It wasn't long before the excitement turned into panic.
She can't breathe! She can't breathe! Stop!
Stop! Stop! This morning, new video shows those chaotic moments that had fans pleading for Travis Scott to end his Astroworld Music Festival as it turned deadly.
People were screaming, not for the music, but for help.
There's videos of people performing CPR en masse on a bunch of bodies around them because people were just literally falling over unconscious, needing to be resuscitated.
18-year-old Aiden Cruz can be seen here climbing a camera platform, pleading with the concert crew to stop the show.
But despite the chaos, the show went on.
There's a video of Travis Scott who is looking at someone's body being crowd surfed towards the front to get it out of the way. It's this guy's body, and it's being pushed over everyone's head, and Travis Scott is looking at it and continues to sing.
I just remember just having so much weight on my body, and I was fighting, and then I stopped because I was getting winded. I was using all the energy I had left in me, and I came to the point where I was accepting my death.
Travis performed for another 40 minutes, seemingly unaware that fans were getting hurt, fainting, and worse. It was a massacre in slow motion, all while the show kept going. Videos showed fans pleading with security, begging for help, but their cries were ignored. By the time the music stopped, it was too late. 10 people had died, including a 9-year-old boy, and hundreds more were injured.
I just want to send out prayers to the ones that was lost last night. We're actually working right now to identify the families so we can help assist them through this tough time. You know, my fans really mean the world to me, and I always just really want to leave them with a positive experience. And anytime I can make out, you know, anything that's going on, I stop the show and, you know, help them get the help they need, you know. I could just never imagine the severity of the situation.
Lawsuits came pouring in with accusations of negligence against Scott and the organizers. Critics were quick to point out Scott's history of encouraging reckless behavior at his shows, a culture of chaos that may have helped set the stage for this horrific disaster.
Police now investigating why it took nearly 40 minutes to stop the rapper's show after Houston police declared the concert a mass casualty event.
Drake, who performed with Scott at the concert, told police that it was difficult to see from the stage what was going on in the crowd, and that he didn't hear concertgoers pleas to stop the show.
I'm from Toronto, but I got Houston tatted on me because it's always been my home, so I appreciate you having me. I love y'all. Astroworld Fest, there's nothing like it.
Make some motherfucking noise for John!
Marty Walgren, who worked for a security consulting firm hired for the Astroworld Festival, told police that he went backstage and allegedly informed the organizers about the brutal scenario. But he claims he was told that Drake still had 3 more songs and the concert could not stop. The police report was released about a month after a grand jury in Houston decided not to charge Scott with any criminal responsibility for the deadly concert. Police Chief Troy Finner said the report was made public, so people could read the entire investigation and draw their own conclusions. When asked if the concert should have been stopped earlier, Finner refused to say what the investigation concluded or whether the police should have intervened sooner. The report was released on the same day that Scott dropped a new album titled Utopia. In 2023, 5 years after releasing Astroworld, Travis Scott released Utopia, leaning even further into his rebellious persona despite the backlash that followed the Astroworld tragedy. Though he was still facing several civil lawsuits, Scott wasn't held criminally responsible, as mentioned earlier, and public opinion seemed to have either moved on or chosen to forget. The anticipation for Utopia was massive. 5 years of building hype, 5 years of imagining what it could be and how it would sound like. Needless to say that for a lot of fans, it was the most anticipated album of the decade at that point. Travis is a master of creating hype. For Utopia, he teased fans with two films, Circus Maximus and Aggro Drift, cryptic posters and billboards, and five different album covers. He had plans to perform at the Pyramids of Giza, but that ultimately didn't happen due to permit issues and local backlash over the idea of mixing Egyptian heritage with his utopian vision. So, did Utopia live up to the hype? The beginning and end of the album are strong, with standout tracks like Hyena, My Eyes, and Sirens. But the middle section of the album feels weaker, with a noticeable dip in quality before picking up again towards the end. Solid overall, but not without its flaws. One of the biggest issues with Utopia is that Travis Scott seems torn between going fully experimental and sticking to a commercial sound. He tries to do both, but it doesn't fully come together. The tracks on their own are amazing, but when played back to back, they don't flow, making the album feel disjointed as a whole. As the album cover hints, Utopia is dark, brooding, and a bit unsettling. It's a major departure from Scott's usual sound. It's not 100% rage like you'd expect from his concert videos. Instead, the album is a roller coaster, shifting between emotions. Emotional, trippy, exhausting, hyped, confusing. It's all over the place.
It's just kind of fun ear candy that is stimulating and cool and intriguing while it's on. I think it's pretty entertaining. A lot of creative and colorful production across this thing. Eclectic features and performances. A wild and dark and diverse album from one of the more aesthetically out there artists in the mainstream.
Despite the mixed reactions to Utopia, one thing is clear. Travis Scott remains a boundary-pushing artist who refuses to stay confined by expectations. He continues to evolve, challenging not just his fans, but the broader music landscape. His ability to stir emotions, provoke thought, and spark conversations has always set him apart. And Utopia, for all its ups and downs, is no exception.
This album to me sounds like all of the music labels and the greats came together and said, we have to produce a phenomenal album.
It may not have been the flawless masterpiece some anticipated, but it was bold, ambitious, and undeniably Scott, someone who dares to take risks even when the outcome is uncertain.
I'm on a fucking mission, man. Like, I'm like, we trying to literally build up these gates at Utopia and make it happen, but I'm starting right now from the ground up to make these walls strong, man.
Looking forward, Travis Scott's legacy seems secure, not only as a musician, but as a cultural icon. From his fashion collaborations to his innovative approach to live performances, Scott has proven time and again that his influence reaches far beyond just music. No matter where he goes next, his mark on the world is indelible.
Where do you see yourself 10 years from now?
Man, I see myself, just like at the top somewhere, man, with family and just like stadiums and just like artists that's just like going crazy and just like, you know, I'm just at a super peak with my creativity, you know, and just hopefully at peace.